from education to employment and everything in between.
It's a clearinghouse for all things shale.
This is the Shale Gas News with Bill DeRozier, Rusty Fender, and Matt Henderson.
Good morning and welcome to Shale Gas News. I'm Bill DeRozier, and thanks to the modern technology of Skype, I'm able to broadcast from my basement bunker, undisclosed location, somewhere in Northeast Pennsylvania. And of course, Rusty Fender and Matt Henderson, longtime guests on the program. They are both out right now. I know Rusty will be joining us in a little bit. Matt Henderson's out on assignment in the greater Williamsport area and is unable to join us here today. But keeping us on the air, DC Taylor, thank you for picking up the call when I called you.
It's the least I could do for you, Bill. Now start talking.
Well, this is the Shale Gas News, and we got a couple of stories here to share with you. A positive thing has happened for Houston in the oil industry. Oil closes above $70 a barrel for the first time since 2018. Wow, it seems like a lifetime ago, buddy. Houston Chronicle's reporting that oil settled above $70 a barrel for the first time in nearly 3 years, crossing another milestone for the industry and Houston as prices continue their rebound. Crude gained more than 1%. And oil has rallied in recent months as energy demand grew with increasing vaccinations, diminished social distancing restrictions, and a bust in travel and other activities. Basically, the economy and life as we know it is starting to open back up, and people are out and about and having a good time, right? I think you're also seeing consumer demand is quite high. I think that's bolstered by quite a bit of federal stimulus money, unemployment compensation, the extra COVID benefits that were being sent out. So we'll see how that all plays out when those things maybe stop or are lessened as the economy kind of opens back up. But for the most part, you look around, there's not enough truck drivers to move the products that are sitting in lots. Manufacturers are producing stuff around the clock, but they don't have enough workers to get the job done. And, you know, people are sitting at home waiting for the Amazon driver to deliver their stuff. But at the same time, too, now, because of vaccinations and states opening back up, are planning trips to leave their house. It's a mess, but hopefully it's a mess that works its way out in a positive way. I really think there are a lot of opportunities, and I know for a fact there are literally hundreds of truck driving positions open in Northeast PA, and I'll use this as an opportunity, DC, as I often do, to plug the Susquehanna County Career and Technology Center CDL program. What a great opportunity for, I was going to say young men and women, but to be honest, older men and women as well have gone through the program, found second careers, or just bolstered their resume. So great opportunity. Hope everyone has a chance to look at that or other career technology programs. But that's enough of my PSA. Back to the news. Pipeline safety update. PHMSA released an advisory bulletin on methane emissions. This, according to the National Law Review, on June 7th, the Pipeline and Hazardous Materials Safety Administration issued this advisory bulletin reminding owners and operators of gas pipeline facilities that protecting our infrastructure of pipelines, enhancing our Securities Act of 2020, or the PIPES Act, contains a self-executing provision requiring operators of gas distribution, transmission, and gathering pipeline facilities to continually inspect and update their maintenance operations plans to address eliminating hazardous leaks and minimizing the release of natural gas from their pipeline facilities. I always remind folks that the oil and gas industry is in the business of capturing hydrocarbons, not letting them leak out. And the industry does a tremendous job trying to minimize those leaks and those types of things from happening. And it's crazy some of the technologies that are being implemented. I was on site recently for a tour of our operations with the AXPC group, the Association of Exploration and Production Companies, and I believe they're going to join us possibly next week or the week after to discuss that tour. But they came out specifically trying to see what companies like Cabot are doing to eliminate fugitive methane emissions. So we took them through a variety of things we've done over the years, from, for instance, going from threaded pipe to welded pipe. Going from certain types of valves that bleed out methane when they actuate or open or close to closed looped valve systems. Another thing we have is a team of guys at Cabot who go around with the FLIR cameras, and they can measure all sorts of different things on sites. But the biggest thing they're looking for is methane emissions or leaks. Interestingly enough, oftentimes when they find a leak, It's typically after a site is just built or being commissioned, and it's typically on the low pressure side, which really just usually ends up being some sort of valve tightening or replacing some sort of small piece of pipe. But again, they routinely inspect these types of sites when they become operational, and then they have a schedule of how often they go back to these sites throughout the year to make sure that nothing new has developed. Again, because we're in the business of capturing methane, not allowing it to leak out. There is a couple of other techniques that we've been employing or analyzing, and some of those have to do with electronically controlled valves versus actuated valves, or valves that use like the pressure or gas from the well. And I think there's even some technologies where we're looking at using compressed air systems to control the well sites as well. So it's really neat, some of the new technology that are out there. And I know that's just, you know, beginning to scrape the surface of what the industry as a whole is doing. You know, some of the most exciting things I've seen are actually drone technologies, DC,
yeah,
where the drones go around and survey for methane leaks.
Okay. All right. Drones. All right. Yeah, I've heard about drones, you know, doing like, you know, in our industry, broadcast industry here, you know, you can send a drone up to check, you know, the tower, make sure the, you know, the lights, or diagnose like a frayed wire or something like that. But you're doing drones for pipes. All right. Okay. Very good.
Yeah. I mean, it beats sending somebody out walking hundreds of miles of pipes through the mountains,
right,
when you can just send a drone out there that can kind of do the same thing.
Yeah, that's perfect.
So it's crazy what technology is evolving into.
It's wonderful.
Another news story here. Biden administration pushes back on oil leasing freeze lawsuits. ENN News reports that the Biden administration struck back this week on claims that the president acted outside of his authority when he ordered a pause on new oil and gas leasing on public lands and waters. In briefs to two federal courts, the Justice Department attorneys argued that Republican Attorney General and the Western Energy Alliance do not have a legal basis to challenge President Biden's executive order temporarily blocking new leasing. And not to get too political on this one, I just find it comical. How many times was President Trump, you know, lambasted and attacked for his orders across the country? And they argued that the, you know, he didn't have the authority to do this stuff. Meanwhile, President Biden, I believe, has issued more executive orders at this point in his presidency than any president in the history of the country has ever done to this point in their presidency, if not more. And the answer now is, well, he's allowed to do whatever he wants to do. It's just the dichotomy, DC. I can't. How do we know what is right? You know, what is up, what is left, what is right?
I don't know. It's so confusing, Bill.
Another story here. Investors set sights on $100 oil. Oilprice.com is reporting that, you know, as we started off the show, Brent and West Texas Intermediate crude have hit $70 a barrel. Some investors are hoping the rally continues up to $100 a barrel of oil. Again, from the energy industry standpoint, that kind of return for their product after years of depressed pricing is a positive, because it allows them to invest in new wells and new technologies and pay their employees and pay their shareholders. But the reality is, I don't know if the consumer really wants to see $100 barrel oil either, because that means the price at the pumps is going to start to go up more. But I don't know. We'll find our happy medium. I'd be more concerned about inflation more than anything. But what about you, DC? Are you seeing much at the pump? You still drive into the radio station every day.
Sure.
You were not sequestered to your house during COVID as much. But I mean, where do you see the price of gas? I personally haven't traveled much lately.
Right. I have not. I've not been too shocked. Maybe it's been a sort of a gradual uptick in the prices of the last few months. I understand the value of, you know, the price of oil going up, because like you just said, you know, to pay the employee, not only pay the employees, also the companies, allows the companies to, you know, invest in new technologies and, you know, make things better. So it's you know, I don't know, meet you in the middle, 75 a barrel, maybe.
Yeah, I think that's a fair price. I agree. Okay, right. And keep in mind, Pennsylvania has some of the highest gas taxes,
yeah,
road use taxes. So that's partly why our gas is much higher than other states.
Right.
So a story caught my eye out of Oklahoma, of all places, or the MidCon, as we call it in the energy industry. Oklahoma revenue soars 34% on oil and gas production comeback. This according to bondbuyer.com. Oklahoma's post-pandemic economic recovery is being bolstered by strong consumption, tax receipts, and a rebound of the state's oil and gas market a year after it tanked and pushed the state's economy into a deep recession. Treasurer Randy McDaniel said in May, gross receipts to the Treasury surged more than 34% or $1.24 billion. Again, we talk about how there's an attack against fossil fuels in the oil and gas industry, and this industry doesn't pay its fair share, and it doesn't really help us. But again, you don't look at states like Oklahoma, Texas, New Mexico, areas around the country that have substantial gas tax revenue, even Pennsylvania, the impact tax, corporate net income tax, royalty income. And when that all goes away, it hits the state's budgets significantly. So again, this is just further proof that we don't need to get rid of fossil fuels, or we don't need to keep it in the ground. While we can look to transition to a more efficient and responsible energy portfolio, the reality is fossil fuels are here to stay. This one caught my eye also, according to the Wall Street Journal. America's energy, a gift to dictators. This opinion piece. The U.S. is barreling toward one of the greatest self-inflicted wounds in history. This came in the sharp focus last week when President Biden suspended oil leases in Alaska's Arctic National Wildlife Refuge, even as Russia and the Organization of Petroleum Exporting Countries announced production increases. Mr. Biden's anti-carbon crusade will have no effect on the climate, as global demand for fossil fuels continue to increase for decades, no matter what the U.S. does. And the reality is the rest of the world is going to continue to meet those needs. Now, we could produce the oil and natural gas in this country responsibly and know where it comes from and put American workers back to work, generate tax revenue like we just discussed in the previous story, or we can shut it in, hurt our country, allow other countries to do whatever the heck they want around the world to meet the world's demands and still have a climate problem regardless. So again, I think it's short-sighted. You could also look at the fact that President Biden on the first day in office shut down the Keystone XL pipeline, and then a few weeks ago he lifted sanctions on the Nord Stream 2 pipeline, which would deliver more energy from Russia to Germany and Europe, because that makes a lot of sense. Let's kneecap ourselves, but let our – I don't want to say our enemies, but our global competitors continue to do what they're doing and have the negative impacts they are having on the worldwide economy / climate issues. What do you think about this, DC?
It is mind-boggling. I am dumbfounded. The last reading the news the last four and a half months or so. Perfect word you said, short-sighted. It's exactly, they can't see past, you know, 6-7 feet in front of them to see exactly you know, where this is all going to lead, all these actions that they're taking, and to have like you said, our competitors, folks in some countries that maybe don't do things quite on the up and up are being empowered, and again, the United States meanwhile is now facing difficulty with that.
It certainly is. Well, you know who's not going to face difficulty? Rusty Fender, as he has joined us, of course, for Fender's Fast Facts. What do you have for us this week, Rusty?
Bill, thanks. And Monday is Flag Day, a holiday of sorts. Betsy Ross, widely credited with designing the first American flag. However, there is no evidence to support that claim. It's interesting, DC. Back in 1870, the only records of Ross came when she did some final sewing on a design flag by Francis Hopkinson. He deserves the credit because early journals from the Continental Congress are said to explicitly name him as the flag's designer.
Well,
Betsy Ross did some stitching in time later on.
Right.
That's pretty interesting.
Okay.
Karen Burke of Walmart's Corporate Communications Center in Bentonville, Arkansas, revealed that Walmart stores sold 115,000, that's 115,000 American flags, on September 11th, 2001, compared to only 6,400 the same date in 2000. The following year, in 9/11, through August 19th, 2011, they sold 8.8 million American flags.
Wow.
Compared to 2.5 million the year before.
Nice.
Absolutely. Too bad it didn't last.
Right.
A 17-year-old student in D.C. designed the flag as appears today in anticipation of Alaska and Hawaii. This is back in 1959, becoming states. Robert G. Heft created the 50-star flag as part of a history project for which he received a B- before submitting it to Congress for consideration. Then in August of 1959, President Dwight D. Eisenhower personally chose Heft's design over 1,573 other applicants and informed him of the news over the telephone. Heft's teacher also changed his grade to an A.
Changed the grade. Oh, he's like, okay, man, fine.
Really can't argue with that. I get a B minus and it's the state flag, right?
Right.
National flag.
Right.
During the opening sequence of Gilligan's Island, 22 seconds in, the flags can be seen flying at half staff off in the distance before they leave on their 3-hour tour.
Okay.
According to a 1994 audiobook co-authored by Russell Johnson, who played the professor on the program, this is because the show's pilot episode wrapped up filming on November 22nd, 1963, the very afternoon John F. Kennedy was shot to death.
Oh, wow. Okay. All right.
That is something, huh?
Okay.
Despite the harsh temperature and conditions of the moon's atmosphere, that's 183 degrees in the daytime and minus 68 at night. Five of the six flags that were planted during the Apollo missions are still standing. According to Buzz Aldrin, the only one that fell over and seen on the ground was blown over by the exhaust from Apollo 11 during its liftoff from the moon's landing, the moon's surface.
Still there.
It's
okay.
Pretty interesting.
All right.
And Flag Day isn't a national holiday yet. It's not a federal holiday, technically. And it's only a state holiday in two states in the United States. Can you name either state, DC?
Let's go with...
They're right next to each other.
Two states. I'll go with Virginia and West Virginia.
That's really good. Virginia being the first, you know, the nations. Pennsylvania and New York State.
Oh.
How about that?
Oh.
The only difference is Pennsylvania celebrates it when it is on June 14th. It is a state holiday. However, New York moved it back in 1971 to the second Sunday in June.
Second Sunday, okay.
Flag Day.
Okay.
Those are some of the fast facts this week. Flag Day. So fly your flag, DC.
Absolutely. Proud to. Thank you, Rusty Fender, for those Fender's fast fun facts. And this is the Shale Gas News with Bill DeRozier, Rusty Fender, Matt Henderson, and DC Taylor. Stay tuned for more.
Why are natural gas pipelines important?
The most efficient and effective way to safely move natural gas is through a pipeline system.
We're constantly monitoring our systems and making sure that we're operating in the most reliable and, most importantly to me, the safest manner possible.
This system, over its life, is 99.9997% safe.
Cabot Oil and Gas Corporation, producing abundant opportunities.
Get your new roof installed with Green Rhino Builders. Call 844-900-GREEN now to get your free estimate. They service all of Northeast PA. Green Rhino Builders can meet you in person, video chat, or even speak over the phone. They can even get you an estimate without stepping foot on your property. Call 844-900-GREEN now to get your free estimate. That's 844-900-GREEN now to get your free estimate. Green Rhino Builders can even finance your new roof for as low as $79 per month. Does your roof have damage that may have been caused by the weather? Green Rhino Builders is the first company in NEPA to work with all of the major insurance companies and can help you get your replacement roof for only the cost of your insurance deductible. Call 844-900-GREEN now to get someone from Green Rhino Builders out to your home to inspect your roof. Call Green Rhino Builders, 844-900-GREEN, for your free estimate today. Online at greenrhinobuilder.com.
It's always a good time for Greenlee's Barbecue.
For all your meat eating needs.
Pulled pork, ribs, brisket, chicken thighs, grilled chicken planks, ribeye steaks, salmon burgers, and beef burgers, plus salads and side dishes delivered or for catering at your weddings, company parties, and other crazy soirees, you crazy kids. GreenleesBBQ.com. Greenlee's Barbecue, Route 6, Tunkhannock. Look for the school bus next to Keystone Truck Caps. Greenlee's Barbecue.
Yeah, the benefits are very good. The benefits are all day one here. The dental health, vision, everything is top notch. Everything is very good.
Drivers wanted.
The 401k plan, we have a 6% matching program. The medical, there's a health spending account, and you could use that for co-pays. You could use that for prescription drugs. You could use that for anything. just to help along with deductibles. And then you could put in from your paycheck, it's tax exempt, you could put in so much bi-weekly, and then that helps out too, because it is before taxes.
If you're looking for steady year-round work with a company that cares about you and your family, at GDS you will drive locally and be home after every shift. Get all the details and advance your career with GDS, a division of Cabot Oil and Gas, where you'll drive the newest fleet on the road.
The steady schedule, the 4-2 schedule for a driver, a 4-2 schedule is great.
Gas Search Drilling Services. Get the phone number at gassearchdrilling.com.
Welcome back to the Shale Gas News. It's my pleasure to introduce a good friend of the program, Rep. Aaron Coffer out of Luzerne County. If you know the greater Kingston, Wyoming area, that's what he represents. Aaron, thank you for joining me here this morning.
Yeah, thank you, Bill. Thanks for having me. And of course, you can't forget part of the Back Mountain as well. So,
I mean, that is a fair point. Anyone familiar with the old rock cut getting up into the Back Mountain in that area, beautiful country, Aaron does represent that as well. And who knows, well, a topic for another day, what the districts will look like going forward once all that redistricting happens, right?
You and me both would like to know the answer to that, but yes.
Well, I was going to say the reason I invited you on this program, Aaron, is you've been a traveling man. Last week, you had the opportunity to not only visit Western PA and tour a great manufacturing the building of a great manufacturing facility, the Shell Petrochemical Plant. You also ventured over to the border in Ohio to tour a solar manufacturer as well that uses natural gas. So I thought, why not get you on the show and tell everyone here, our listeners in Northeast PA, about the tremendous work Shell's doing and First Solar is doing out there. So let's start with Shell. What did you think of the $7 billion complex now?
You know, I have to say, the first thing you hear about how big it is, and as soon as you get there, it is bigger than you even pictured it to be. You know, when you're riding on a bus, you know, sort of going around and sort of going up and down these little roads and going through the facility, it's truly amazing how large of a facility this is. When you get to that $7 billion figure that you're talking about, thousands of employees there. I think at their peak, they had about 8,500 employees working there at a given time. And to just see it all happening and you know, to talk about how they did, you know, different pieces and how they were able to manufacture it and all the ingenuity that goes into it, it's truly mind-boggling to just sit there and say, somebody, you know, not just somebody, but a group of people sat down to engineer this entire thing, to build this facility that, you know, next year will be up and running, hopefully. So incredible to see it in person and really look forward to that being up and running here in the very near future.
It certainly will. And it's amazing, this amount of work. I can remember the Shell cracker plant probably about 10, if not 11 years ago, being proposed. And then how many years we just heard about the tremendous impact it would have and what needed to be done to land it and then to actually break ground on it and start construction. It's just truly amazing. And I myself have had the opportunity multiple times to visit the facility and or drive through the facility. And as you started off the show, it's crazy. You ever see one of those like panoramic pictures? I think the complex is too big. I don't think you could do a panoramic photo of it.
No, we couldn't, and we actually went up to a hill, a little bit away from there, so that we could actually get most of the in one picture that we took a picture up there after we toured it. One thing that I thought too was just a little funny and a little local flavor there, that one of those streets, because they have the streets named of where in between the facilities, one was called Pierogi Street too. So you know, knowing that the Pierogi Festival is coming up here this weekend, you know, it's especially exciting. So.
Oh, no. Yeah. Well, who doesn't like pierogies there? Well, again, the Shell cracker plant you'd mentioned, it's going to be open operational next year. Knock on wood here, as long as everything goes according to plan. Multi-billion dollar investment, thousands of employees. And I'm just curious to see what the actual trickle down effect will be once it's operational. But while we got you on the phone for a couple more minutes, tell us a bit about the trip over the border to Ohio to tour First Solar. I know people are probably listening to this and saying, why are we talking about a solar plant? But I can tell you with certainty that facility uses natural gas and uses a lot of it. So tell us about it, Aaron.
Yeah, let me backtrack one quick second back to Shell. Just to say, you know, I think that's a big opportunity here of what we're talking about in Pennsylvania. You talked about the downstream opportunities. You're now going to be making a lot of raw goods out of that, or you know, the goods that can be used to further, you know, further value-added products from them. And so that opportunity in Pennsylvania is a real opportunity for us of the future of manufacturing in Pennsylvania will be coming out of that Shell cracker plant. But, you know, to get to First Solar, really a truly incredible facility that we were through. You know, they use a lot of natural gas in Illinois to actually make the glass for the solar panels. So we didn't actually get to see that itself. But the, you know, they were very clear that, you know, solar can't exist without natural gas. And I think some people sometimes, you know, some environmentalists will say, oh, let's just all do solar. Well, guess what? You can't do that without natural gas. And, you know, that's just the fact of life and the fact of the way of energy is produced and solar panels are produced, that you need that. And it was truly an incredible facility. Just announcing this week that they're doing another facility, a $680 million investment further, another facility in Ohio to even expand what they're doing here as the only top 10 solar panel manufacturer in the world in the United States is First Solar in Ohio. So now that they're reinvesting and doing another facility, I think it's good for the U.S. economy, good for natural gas, and good for the economy in general to have this growing here in the United States, as opposed to the opposing solar panels that are made in China using different silicon technology, a lot different than what they're doing here in this U.S.-based First Solar company.
And we've talked about it on the show at length before, and it's something we've taken pride in our position on this program. We believe there's a place for solar and wind and alternatives. We believe that solar and wind are a great supplement to the grid. But one of the things we believe above all is if we're going to do solar and wind, build it here in America. And the fact that this facility already exists in America, it is now expanding. It's utilizing – did I understand like something like a couple hundred, if not a thousand different – American-owned businesses across Ohio and the Midwest states to build these products? I mean, that's downstream, trickle-down effects 101 right there. And why wouldn't we want more of those capabilities here in this country?
Yeah, and just for that First Solar facility, in Ohio alone, there's 220 other businesses that directly feed into the finished product of their solar panels. 220 individual businesses in Ohio. Now, that doesn't take into Illinois, Pennsylvania, other companies that do work with them. So it's truly a big, big number that once you start getting to it, it really is quite large. But
you're probably the epitome of a modern day thinker, Aaron. You you had a hand in Act 66, which is a first of its kind business attraction legislation that was passed and signed into law last year. And you're also working on some community solar and solar initiatives here in the state, recognizing that the two can coexist. And quite frankly, you know, new modern day manufacturing facilities will implement best available technologies, emissions reductions technologies, and most likely some sort of green or alternative energy portfolio.
Yep. And part of this too is, you know, if you look at and you want to say, you know, who's producing, you know, responsible solar even, you know, and by that, you can mean a lot of different things. But if you look at the stuff made in China, there's, you know, the human rights, slave work that's being done there and a lot of these facilities. Now, this is an opportunity with what's going on in North America, in the United States, in a state over from us, over in Ohio, of what they're doing to be on the cutting edge and competing with, you know, sort of outdated technology with what the Chinese primarily are producing in these solar panels with silicon. You know, this is way ahead of its time of what they're doing in Ohio. And I really do believe that they're making a responsible product that really does take into account, you know, the future of our country, recycling what's used in their solar panels as well, something that you often hear a lot of complaints about. But they are recycling their materials as well, and really to a sustainable energy solution going forward.
Certainly. Well, I'd be remiss, and I know our legions of fans would be upset if I didn't at least ask you what's the latest out of Harrisburg with the last few minutes I have you on the interview here. What's the latest as it relates to the budget and some of the other initiatives you guys are working on down there right now?
So, we are working. We're working here to end the governor's emergency powers right now. That is the big thing that we're working on right now. And I do believe that in the next several weeks that we will complete the budget. We just got our first budget briefing yesterday, going through some of the numbers and the details. I know we'll be doing more of that today and hopefully getting out of here by June 30th and getting a responsible budget done on time. So fingers crossed, that is the big thing that we're talking about here in Harrisburg, and hopefully we'll get that through.
Well, Aaron, I really appreciate it as always. Thank you for joining the program here, and best of luck as you guys navigate the end of the legislative session down there in Harrisburg and try to get done hopefully before the end of June or the beginning of July. Thank you again for coming on the program, and we'll catch up with you real soon.
Thank you very much, Bill. Take care.
Great. We're going to take a quick break here on the Shale Gas News. Stay tuned for more after a word from our sponsors.
Do you know the power of America's energy security? Security that starts right here? The Marcellus Shale alone contains enough energy to meet our demand for the next 100 years. And that's just by today's estimates. If Pennsylvania were a country, it would be the fifth largest producer of natural gas in the world. All thanks to the incredible natural gas production right here in northeastern Pennsylvania. Cabot Oil and Gas Corporation, producing abundant opportunities.
Lindy Corporation is a pipeline and infrastructure company, and Lindy is proud to work in the Marcellus region, towns and cities, and beyond. Apply at lindyco.com. And remember, if Lindy wasn't hiring yesterday, chances are we will be hiring tomorrow.
Are you a truck driver looking to earn $1,000 to $2,100 a week with full benefits? Well, Eastern Freight Systems and Tunkhannock are seeking local, regional, and OTR drivers. They even have an oil field division with lanes based in both Tunkhannock and Pittston, PA. They're looking for motivated drivers who are looking to earn good money to join their team. A clean MVR with professional driver training or experience are required. Come join the growing team at Eastern Freight Systems by calling 570-836-8050.
If you're in construction or the gas industry, your team's getting it done 24 hours a day, and so is BX3. When you're working, so is BX3. They're your prime connection to parts, tools, and equipment rentals. If they don't have it at their Montrose or Tunkhannock locations, they'll find it for you somehow, some way. Trust me, they know people who know people. They're the relentless problem solvers. Call BX3 in Tunkhannock, 836-3000. In Montrose, it's 278-7368. Again, Tunkhannock, 836-3000, Montrose, 278-7368.
Welcome back to the Shale Gas News, and it's now our pleasure to bring from our partners, our friends down at PMA, the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association. They host a regular weekly program, a program that we have highlighted from time to time on this show. This past week on their program, they hosted some experts surrounding the PennEast pipeline. That is a UGI Energy Services project that will build a pipeline essentially from the Marcellus fields here in northeast Pennsylvania across Pennsylvania into northern New Jersey and the greater New York City market. But at the end of the day, the project has been stalled by issues with New Jersey. The case, or rather the issues have worked its way through various courts and is now at the Supreme Court level. So PMA hosted a series of experts, including Pam Whitmer, who's been on this program before. She represents UGI Energy Services, to discuss where the project is currently and also what's going on at the court level.
And we present to you now the second part of that conversation from PMA perspective.
Pam, just to, again, to make clear, the consortium, you guys didn't just like start building the pipeline because you felt like it and because you wanted to. There were a lot of approvals and permissions that were required to get this project underway, were there not?
So we held a number, the number of hearings that were held and public input sessions that were held are in the multiples, tens of multiples. And so there was, over this course of from 2014 until we received our certificate from FERC in January of 2019, there were many, many opportunities for individuals along the way, as I say, including this both states, New Jersey and Pennsylvania. And that's in addition to what we will have to receive from the individual states from a permitting perspective. So the states have the ability from an environmental control perspective to provide or not the permits that are going to be necessary for construction. So there is there's a lot of different and very rigorous oversight throughout the application process. Many changes were made to the route as a result of the public input sessions, when we would sit down and we would meet with property owners and they would say, you know, could you move it away from this barn, or could you move it away from our driveway, you know, a little bit further, you know, so we accommodated that And I'm happy to say that the vast majority of property owners, we came to an amicable settlement with, and we did not have to take exercise eminent domain. So, you know, it's really very important to be able to sit down and be transparent with property owners. And once you're able to do that, then you can come to good resolutions. But it is, to your point, a very rigorous process.
And so with the federal authority, the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission, certifying that there is a public need for this infrastructure, and having completed the approval process through FERC and the laying out of the route, that that the consortium could begin construction, could begin creating this means by which energy can be delivered from where it's produced in Pennsylvania to customers in New Jersey. And so Charlie is our legal expert. I'm going to bring you in here. The state of New Jersey launched a very novel legal claim saying that they could stop the pipeline. Can you explain what their reasoning was?
Keep in mind that FERC, and as it's currently operating, has been doing so for about 70 years, as the Third Circuit recognized in its opinion. New Jersey has, and the core issue in the case, New Jersey has raised an 11th Amendment claim saying that it is immune from suit by anybody other than the federal government in federal court. Here, the core issue in this case is under the certificate of convenience that FERC issues. The holder of the certificate is allowed to exercise the eminent domain power in order to acquire the right of way for the pipe that FERC has already approved. PennEast went into federal court when they couldn't make a deal with New Jersey and some other property owners. And New Jersey said, hey, wait a minute, you can't sue us because we have 11th Amendment immunity. And New Jersey has essentially said that the federal government, if it can delegate its eminent domain power to a private party to take state property at all, it didn't do it in the Natural Gas Act. And the Third Circuit agreed with that argument. And PennEast then sought a petition for certiorari to the Supreme Court, and Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association and the New Jersey Business and Industry Association, recognizing the importance to business and manufacturing of a stable, secure, reasonably priced energy supply, filed an amicus brief supporting PennEast's petition for certiorari. Then once the court agreed to hear the case, we filed a second amicus brief supporting PennEast's position on the merits.
Ray, can you just talk a little bit about where the state of New Jersey is coming from on this? It seems as though, from what I took away as a non-lawyer from the oral arguments, that the case that's being made by the state of New Jersey is really just a delaying tactic. It really seems as though they're just trying to exercise a veto over any interstate energy infrastructure.
First, back to Pam's point about the rigorous environmental review that this pipeline has to undergo. I think New Jersey recognized that PennEast was going to meet all its environmental standards. So if you just apply the law as it would apply to any pipeline, I think they would get all the approvals that they would, you know, ultimately have to do. What happened was 3 years ago, there was a change of administrations and a new governor, Governor Murphy, his administration is not as friendly to natural gas as the prior administration had been. As Charlie mentioned, they brought a novel claim, the 11th Amendment claim, as a way to try to block this pipeline. And it's important to remember that this particular claim they're making is not just on preventing the pipeline going through state-owned lands. New Jersey has a very active program where they buy easements on farmland and on other, you know, open space areas in order to keep it green, to keep it from being developed. So there are easements that the state, you know, is, you know, a title holder to, you know, all across the state, effectively meaning that this pipeline can't go anywhere without running into one of those properties. So, you know, if the court upholds New Jersey's claim, New Jersey will have an effective right by asserting the 11th Amendment from keeping this pipeline from coming into New Jersey.
And Pam, I just wanted to put a special emphasis about the conduct of the negotiations between the PennEast Consortium and the state of New Jersey All you guys want to do is just pay them money for the right-of-way. Isn't that correct?
That's absolutely correct. And in fact, going to your statement about, you know, what is New Jersey, you know, ultimately trying to do, and, you know, Justice Breyer, I think, and Chief Justice Roberts kind of really laid it out. And they said, you just oppose Penn East. And the Deputy Attorney General for New Jersey, who was arguing the case, said, yes, we do oppose Penn East. And in fact, the state of Oregon, which was the lead on the state attorney general's amicus brief, quite clearly said they hope that for a positive outcome on the U.S. Supreme Court case so that they can use this, the claim of sovereign immunity, to stop other projects. So this is really about politics and not, and that's the really unfortunate and sad thing, Dave, because when you talk about the importance of energy to the economy, the importance of energy, as Charlie was saying, low-cost, reliable energy to low-income individuals and communities, that we need to be able to give some stability to, it's through, you know, reliable, low-cost energy that they can afford. That's clean.
And, you know, Ray, we see the news coming out of New Jersey every so often about you guys having a polar vortex and people being in desperate need of energy for heat and, you know, prices spiking. Like, the whole point of the Penn East project is to help to minimize that, to help spare New Jersey consumers from those kinds of spikes.
No, absolutely. And again, you know, prices for both electricity, which is fueled by natural gas, have come down in the last decade. Prices for heating has come down, you know, in the last decade. But we've seen, you know, the impacts of what could happen. We have cold winters. We need a reliable source of, you know, heating, you know, for our communities. If we experience something like Texas went through recently, it could be a lot worse in New Jersey, where we have an older housing stock, really cold winters. We need to make sure that we have reliable and affordable energy supply coming through, and natural gas is our main source of power.
And there's, you know, with abundant natural gas, you know, so close by here in Pennsylvania, there's no reason why you folks shouldn't have that. And so, Charlie, let me turn again to you. Can you describe sort of the process of how the court is going to proceed, and what we should look for leading up to the end of the session in June?
I don't think we'll hear anything from the court until we know the decision, until the opinion comes out. The court will have met in conference to discuss the case. It was very hard, at least in my judgment, it was hard to read the justices the day of the argument. You could read maybe two of them as leaning one way, two of them as leaning another, but the other five, it was tough. So it's hard to predict how the case is gonna turn out. You know, I wanted to follow up on a point that Pam made, and that is that we need to remember that the impact of the court's decision, if it were to accept New Jersey's sovereign immunity argument, its 11th Amendment argument, that would not just be to New Jersey, it would be nationwide. And so what it would do, it would allow any state in the union to have a veto right over a pipeline if that state simply does not want it coming into its, crossing its property. And it goes further than that. It would allow a private individual who may oppose a pipeline to convey his or her property to the state for the express purpose of the state then exercising its sovereign immunity to prevent the pipeline from coming across. And it's virtually impossible to do an interstate pipeline without crossing some state-owned land. For example, the riverbed of the Delaware River. If you want to go from Pennsylvania to New Jersey, you got to cross it. And New Jersey could block that if their sovereign immunity claim is upheld in this case.
And that Justice Amy Coney Barrett actually asked a question related to that point, that she asked the Solicitor General, Deputy Solicitor General from New Jersey, could the state of New Jersey acquire a piece of land in the path of the pipeline for the purpose of stopping the pipeline? And he said yes, that it could.
In fact, Dave, of the 42 parcels that are the subject of this of the dispute, Only two does the state of New Jersey actually have a possessory interest. The other 40 are part, are exactly what Charlie just described. They are conservation easements.
Well, and this is just especially preposterous because, of course, for all of us who've seen pipelines deployed, that the earth is disturbed for a temporary time, and then that everything is replaced to perfection as it was before, and that there's no disturbance to open space, and even in forest land or parkland, there's merely a 50-foot right of way. And so the goal of conservation is in no way inhibited. It just, well, anyway, it just strikes me as being fanaticism.
Well, Dave, it seems serendipitous that we're talking about this and we're having the Secretary of Energy, when asked whether we could transport the oil that goes through the pipeline by truck, she said, no, pipelines are the way to go.
And of course, you're exactly right, Charlie. Stay current on what's happening in your state government by visiting pamanufacturers.org.
And this is the Shale Gas News. I'm DC Taylor, along with Bill DeRozier, Rusty Fender, and Matt Henderson. Please stay here for more.
Cabot has been, a fantastic corporate partner because they caught the vision. We have a goal to end hunger in Northeast Pennsylvania by 2025. Cabot's contribution is helping make that happen.
I live in Springville. I'm a landowner in Auburn Township. They've treated me with respect, my property with respect. They do an excellent job. Everything has been neat. There's never been anything out of place. Anything that they said they were going to do, they did. They came to you and told you what they were going to do. They gave you a timetable. They followed that timetable. Do not be afraid to invest with these people.
Industries like Cabot not only helped and lent their support to the Dietrich Theater, but they reached out and asked how they could help in other ways. Cabot has shown us that they want to invest in our community, that they're here to stay, and they want to support us for the long run.
For more information, go to wellsaidcabot.com.
Environmental protection affects you no matter what industry you serve. Oso Wash provides the only certified clean solution you should trust for your vehicles. Oso is the only certified oil and gas industry clean tank washing facility in Northeast PA that's available 7 days a week. If it could get dirty, Oso can clean it. They're about 6 miles north of Tunkhannock off of Route 29 on Aldovan Road. 570-996-WASH and find them on Facebook. They are Oso Wash.
Are you looking for work in the gas industry? Lindy Corporation is always looking for good people. Apply at lindyco.com. Lindy installs water lines, sewer lines, and gas lines. We're busy in the Marcellus region. Apply for your next career at lindyco.com.
Why choose Lackawanna College? Lackawanna College can give you the start you need. Spend 2 years earning your degree and go right to work earning a great salary. With 29 degree programs in competitive industries like culinary and hospitality management, petroleum and natural gas, and sonography, Lackawanna College can help you find your future. Visit lackawanna.edu for more information on how to apply or contact the admissions office at 570-961-7814. Why choose Lackawanna College? If you're looking to get ahead in your career or start a new one, Lackawanna College's Continuing Education Department offers a wide variety of certificate programs that are highly affordable and can help you get back to work quickly. Specialized training for workforce development and allied health careers is available, as well as the Lackawanna College Police Academy and the EMS Academy. Call 570-961-7813 for more information or visit lackawanna.edu. Find your future at Lackawanna College.
This is the Shale Gas News with Bill DeRozier, Rusty Fender, Matt Henderson. And I'm DC Taylor. Coming up in just a few minutes, the job segment sponsored by Lackawanna College. First, it's time for the top five stories. Each weekday, Marcellus Drilling News locates and shares news from the Marcellus and Utica Shale. Over 50,000 people read MDN each month, so we use it as a barometer to tell us which stories people find the most interesting. MDN editor Jim Willis compiles a list of the top stories each week. So here we go. The top five most read stories on MarcellusDrilling.com. That is MDN over the past 7 days. Coming in at number five last week, NGL prices and profitability more than double for Marcellus Utica drillers. NGL, natural gas liquid, revenues for U.S. drillers soared in the first quarter of 2021, up 100%. In other words, doubled over the
over the same time, the same quarter, that is, in 2020, which was the quarter when COVID-19 began to seep into the public consciousness. In particular, international demand for U.S. liquefied petroleum gas, LPG, or propane, helped propel NGL revenues higher in the first quarter of 2021. Guess which company posted the highest year-over-year increases for both NGL prices and revenues? Southwestern Energy, which drills exclusively in the Marcellus Utica, posted the highest gains in NGL prices and revenue in the first quarter of 2021. Of the 10 largest shale producers covered by S&P Global Market Intelligence in the report on this post on MarcellusDrilling.com, half of them are drillers that work exclusively in the Marcellus Utica region, showing just how important NGLs are in the Marcellus Utica constellation.
Number 4D, Clean Energy for America, bill targets landowner royalties. Now, the Democrats in Congress are making another run at punishing or eliminating the use of fossil fuels. About a month ago, Senate Finance Committee Chairman Ron Wyden, he's a wacko from Oregon, and 24 fellow Senate Democrats introduced a bill called the Clean Energy for America Act. It's an overhaul of the federal energy tax code aimed at combating non-existent human-caused climate change. Now, this time around, the Dems are targeting, among other things, repeal of the percentage depletion allowance that landowners and investors use in offsetting royalty payments for tax purposes. In other words, mom-and-pop landowners that will receive royalties will see their federal income tax bills go up, unless you stop this disgusting bill now before it becomes law. The so-called Clean Energy for America Act is a horrible bill from beginning to end, but in this post, we will be concerning ourselves with only the percentage depletion allowance, explaining what it is and how its elimination will harm landowners, DC.
All right, the third most popular story over the past week. Experts say PTT ethane cracker in Belmont, Ohio will get built. We've written many articles. There have been many articles on MarcellusDrilling.com about the potential PTT cracker plant since April 2015, when PTT, a huge petrochemical company based in Thailand, first announced that they would consider building an ethane cracker plant in Ohio. PTT has teased a final investment decision, an FID, to move forward and begin construction so many times over the years since then, we've lost count and we've become a bit jaded about how about the prospects for the project. However, someone we highly admire and respect, someone who really would know whether or not it will get built, now says he is highly confident one way or another it's going to happen. The PIOGA, Pennsylvania Independent Oil and Gas Association, spring meeting in Pittsburgh a few days ago, one of the speakers, MDN friend Charlie Schliebs, expressed confidence that the project will get built. Charlie heads up Stone Pier Capital Advisors, a Pittsburgh-based boutique M&A financial and strategic advisory firm. Charlie is also the founder and chairman of the Northeast Petrochemical Development Conference. He's got an insider's perspective on these things. We say, if Charlie says the Ohio cracker will get built, you can take it to the bank. The interesting thing about Charlie's comments is that he says while the project will get built, it may not in the end have the PTT name on it. That's the new news for us.
Number 2D, which MU drillers are likely the next targets for acquisition? M&A, or mergers and acquisitions, is on everyone's mind in the oil and gas industry, particularly in the Marcellus Utica region. EQT, under the leadership of Toby Rice, already the largest natural gas producer in the country, has been on the prowl. In the past 8 months, EQT has picked up all of Chevron's MU assets, and most recently, EQT picked up all of Alta Resources' MU assets. EQT is still in the hunt. Who's next on the list to get acquired? We have some possibilities. The expert analysts at S&P Global Market Intelligence have been pondering the M&A question for the MU and provide the analysis below of who may be snapped up next. While EQT is most often mentioned as a potential buyer, it is not a foregone conclusion that all M&A happening in the MU will feature EQT as the buyer. According to S&P, Cabot Oil and Gas, Chesapeake Energy, National Fuel Gas Company, a.k.a. Seneca Resources, Southwestern Energy, and Range Resources are all potential buyers. As for potential targets, S&P says CNX Resources is at the top of the list, the only public company on that list, followed by Chief Oil and Gas, Tug Hill Operating, and HG Energy 2. DC?
All right. The number one most popular story on MDN over the past week. Huge news. Permian driller Cimarex buying out Cabot Oil and Gas. This is from May 24th. We're devastated. We know you're not supposed to have favorites, but we do. Our favorite Marcellus Utica driller for years has been Cabot Oil and Gas. We know some great folks who work for Cabot. It has been a peerless operator in the Northeast, Marcellus making money when nobody else could. Cabot treats its landowners well, cares about the environment, gives big money to local nonprofit causes, and in general is the best kind of corporate citizen anybody could wish for. We suppose it was only a matter of time before Cabot became a target in this merger mania we're currently going through. A few days ago, Cabot announced a merger of equals with Cimarex, a big driller in the Permian and Mid-Continent. The truth is, Cimarex is buying out Cabot. Why do we not hold to the merger of equals narrative being peddled by both companies? Because Cimarex shareholders will own 50.5% of the new company, and Cabot shareholders will own 49.5%. Because Cabot CEO Dan Dinges, will become executive chairman of the board, largely a ceremonial position, and Cimarex CEO Thomas Jordan will become the CEO of the new company. Yes, they're merging. Yes, many people from Cabot will have jobs in the new company, but make no mistake, Cimarex is buying out Cabot. No money will change hands in the deal. It's an all stock transaction. There you go. Top five stories thousands of people read this past week on MDN. Those are it. If you like to keep track of the headlines each day, it's easy. Just sign up for MDN's free daily email at marcellusdrilling.com/email. And now it's time for the job segment, exploring your careers in the energy industries. Brought to you by Lackawanna College and their School of Petroleum and Natural Gas. Lackawanna College, where you go to find your future. Rusty?
Hey, thanks, DC. And I want to thank Bob Williams from Scranton, listening every single week since day one.
Thank you, Bob.
Nice. Tomorrow is here at the Shale Gas News. Bob Williams. Dear gentleman and good friend.
Right.
In Pennsylvania, D.C., Enterprise Products looking for operators, pipeline trainees. That's out of Greensburg, Pennsylvania. Peoples Natural Gas looking for an entry-level engineer. That's out of North Shore. Now, the DDS company is looking for a project manager for their energy services out of Cannonsburg. Williams Companies Energy looking for engineers levels 1, 2, and 3, headquartered in Pittsburgh. TC Energy, a technical training and administrative analyst out of West Alexander. UGI Utilities looking for measurement regulation technicians out of Frackville. Energy Transfer family of partnerships looking for welders. That's Flux Core Stick Shielded Metal Arc out of Honeybrook. And AeroTech, a water transfer technician also based in Cannonsburg. In Ohio, the Kimball Company is looking for an oil and gas administrative assistant based in Dover. Summit Midstream Partners looking for a field operator out of Jacobsburg. TC Energy looking for United States land representative out of Lucas. Patterson UTI looking for a senior field maintenance technician based in St. Clairsville. ROC Service Companies and Experienced Roustabout, headquartered in Cambridge. Northeast Ohio Natural Gas, an account executive level 1 out of Strasburg. Randstad Engineering, a drafter for their CAD division, computer-assisted drawing, is out of Columbus. Equitrans Midstream, a field technician opening out of Bellsville. And Bealsville. And ECM Energy Services, flaggers and traffic control specialists out of Woodsfield. Now in West Virginia, Dominion Energy are looking for a pipeline field specialist out of Danville. CG Hughes Construction Corporation looking for laborers and flaggers as well out of Huntington. Team Fischel, a supervisor for the Natural Gas Distribution Network out of Huntington as well. And Terra Resources Corporation, an operator level 2 out of West Union. Purple Land Management, a lease buyer and a landman out of Morgantown. ERM Group looking for a senior consultant for their environmental planning, permitting, and compliance division out of Charleston. Gulfport Energy, a control room technician out of St. Clairsville, and the Williams Company is looking for an operations intern out of Harrison. Moving to New York State, Kinder Morgan, looking for an operations specialist for the entire Empire State of New York. ECM Energy Services looking for a CDL drivers, Class A and B, multiple openings out of Binghamton. Unit Corporation, a reservoir engineering technician out of the entire state of New York as well. New York State Electric and Gas, an analyst for their gas engineering division based in Binghamton. Fisher Associates, an engineer in land development and entry-level positions as well, open out of Rochester. Martin Energy Group, a project manager headquartered in the Finger Lakes, and GE Power. an EHS specialist, that's environmental health and safety, out of Schenectady. And those are the jobs this week, as D.C. Taylor mentioned, sponsored by Lackawanna College, the School of Petroleum and Natural Gas. Lackawanna College, where you go to find your future. And we certainly thank you all for finding your future here on the Shale Gas News, on our network of stations online all the time at TalkWilliamsport.com, Gem 104 on their fine roster of frequencies. We'll see you next week, same time, same radio stations, for the Shale Gas News. For Bill DeRosa, Matt Henderson, D.C. Taylor, I'm Rusty Fender. Thanks once again for listening to the Shale Gas News.